While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the
eye. Hey, good afternoon, Namibia, and a warm welcome to everyone joining us from near or far. Now, thank you for choosing Eagle FM, the home of insightful conversations and real national dialogue. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and this is On the Radio News Analysis, where headlines meet context. Now, it's Monday, the 24th of November, 2025, and the time is exactly 7 minutes past the hour of 1300 hours. Now, as we begin a brand new week, the country stands at another important crossroads where policies are being tested, communities are demanding answers, and the decisions made today will shape Namibia's tomorrow. Now, in this program, we go beyond reporting the news. We examine the motives, unpack the impacts, and question what it all means for ordinary Namibians, from our business districts to our rural towns. Now, in a time of fast change and louder narratives, we've offered you something steady, informed analysis, incredible voices, and space for critical reflection. Now, from 1300 hours to 1430, Monday through Friday, On the Radar connects you to the issues driving the national conversation with expert commentary, real-life perspectives, and the kind of journalism that doesn't just inform but empowers. Now, this edition will bring key developments into sharper focus, giving you the background, the facts, and the insight needed to understand the bigger picture. You can tune in via the Eagle FM frequency, stream us live via Eagle FM website, or download the Eagle FM app straight to your mobile app and stay connected through our WhatsApp channel for updates, polls, and exclusive content. So settle in, whether you're commuting, working, or listening from home, and stay tuned. This is where Namibia pauses, reflects, and engages with its future. Because on the Radar, the truth is never out of the reach. Now let's jump straight into today's top stories. The Bankers Association of Namibia, also known as BAN, in partnership with the Bank of Namibia, BON, and key industry stakeholders, is hosting the fraud or hosted the Fraud and Cybersecurity Risk Awareness Summit this morning under the theme Strengthening Trust and Resilience in Namibia's Financial System. Now, the summit brings together leaders from banking, financial services, telecommunications, law enforcement, and technology sectors in order to address the growing risks posed by fraud and cybercrime in an increasingly digital financial environment. The event comes at a critical time as Namibia continues its transition towards digital banking, mobile money, and online financial services, which, while improving accessibility and convenience, also expose institutions and customers to sophisticated cyber threats. Now, the summit aims to create a collaboration platform for dialogue, knowledge sharing, and the development of coordinated strategies to protect the integrity of the country's financial system. Discussions at the summit are centered on emerging fraud trends such as identity theft, phishing, SIM swap fraud, account takeovers, and ransom attacks, as well as the evolving tactics used by cyber criminals both locally and internationally. Experts are also unpacking vulnerabilities within digital infrastructure and examining ways in which artificial intelligence and advanced technologies are being exploited for criminal activities. In addition, the summit highlights the importance of strengthening regulatory frameworks, improving internal controls within financial institutions, and enhancing real-time threat detection and response mechanisms. A strong focus is also placed on public awareness and education, with stakeholders emphasizing that consumers remain one of the most important lines of defense against fraud. Now, speaking on the importance of the summit, organizers noted that trust is the foundation of any financial system, and especially the deputy governor at the Bank of Namibia, Leonie Dan, spoke about trust being the foundation of any financial system. As criminals become more innovative and organized, banks and regulators must remain proactive, united, and tangible in their approach, now by fostering cooperation and information sharing between institutions and enforcement agency, Namibia can improve its reliance or resilience against cybercrime and financial fraud. Now let's take a listen to Dantagoras Jimmy. She is the CEO of the Bankers Association of Namibia, speaking at the event today.
On behalf of the Bankers Association of Namibia, it gives me great pleasure to welcome you to this Fraud and Cybersecurity Awareness Summit, held under the theme Strengthening Trust and Resilience in Namibia's Financial System. Today's theme is not only timely, it is essential. As Namibia continues to elevate financial inclusion, digital transformation, and connectivity across the economy, our responsibility to protect the financial well-being of households, businesses, and communities has never been greater. Our financial sector is facing increasing threats from fraud, cybersecurity, identity theft, data breaches, and sophisticated social engineering schemes. These are not only theoretical risks, they affect ordinary Namibians every day. Pensioners, students, entrepreneurs, civil servants, farmers, public institutions. Fraudsters adapt very quickly. Technology is evolving rapidly, and the financial sector must remain two steps ahead and not one step behind. This is why we convene today, to learn from local and international experts and to learn from each other, to strengthen collaboration, to unify efforts across banks, regulators, law enforcement, telecommunications, fintech, and the public sector, and above all, to protect the trust that Namibians place in the financial system. Allow me to extend our gratitude again to all the distinguished speakers and panelists who will guide our reflections today, starting with Ms. Linda Aipinge Nakale, Acting ED of MICT, who will deliver the keynote on the national commitment to combating financial fraud. Deputy Governor Ms. Leonie Dunn, who will unpack the importance of financial system integrity and public confidence. Our industry partners, including TransUnion Namibia, Standard Bank Namibia, FirstRand Namibia, the Financial Literacy Initiative, NAMFISA, CRAN, the Bank of Namibia, and representatives from the banking sector and other fraternities. Your continued collaboration underscores a shared belief. Security is not competitive. It's not a competitive advantage. It's a national obligation. Namibia's digital payment system, mobile money, online banking, card payments, and digital government services is expanding very rapidly. With this growth comes risk. Increasing phishing and attacks targeting consumers, synthetic identity and data-driven fraud, insider threats, cross-border cybercrime networks, AI-powered manipulation and social engineering, vulnerability in unprotected devices and networks. But we must now also recognize the emerging opportunities. Artificial intelligence, data analytics, biometrics, behavioral monitoring, and shared fraud databases provide unprecedented tools to detect, prevent, and disrupt fraudulent activity. The challenge before us today is very clear. We must embrace innovation while safeguarding the public. Combating fraud is not the responsibility of banks alone. It requires regulators who set strong frameworks and clear expectations, law enforcement agencies that respond rapidly and decisively, technology partners who innovate responsibly, consumers who stay informed and vigilant, banks that uphold strong protocols, controls, transparent communication, and ethical conduct, industry bodies like BAN that coordinate efforts and foster mutual trust. If any link in this chain is weak, the entire system is vulnerable. This is why BAN continues to support the Industry Fraud Working Group. And I would like to acknowledge the chairperson of our Industry Fraud Working Group as well, who was very instrumental in driving the process and allowing us to all be here today. Ramesh, if you can stand up, where are you? Yes. Thank you so much, Ramesh. So the Industry Fraud Working Group is a key stakeholder, joint stakeholder training, information sharing platform, public education programs are also important, and regulatory engagements to strengthen system-wide security. Today's session, including the Bank of Namibia Consumer Connect AI demonstration, remind us that security is not only about technology. It's about protecting people. A secure financial system is where every Namibian, regardless of age, income, or where they live, can transact confidently without fear or of deception or loss. Fraud destroys livelihoods. Cybercrime destroys businesses. And both ultimately threaten economic stability. By empowering consumers with knowledge and giving institutions tools to respond, we safeguard not just the financial system, but the trust that underpins the entire economy. So what is the purpose of today's summit? As we engage in today's presentations and panel discussions, I encourage us all to share insights openly. No organization should fight alone. Identify new collaboration pathways. Let us strengthen the bridges between banks, regulators, telecoms, fintechs, and government. Commit to practical solutions. Awareness must translate into action. Reinforce our collective responsibility. Every participant here plays a crucial role in protecting Namibia's future. In conclusion, ladies and gentlemen, fraudsters are innovative, persistent, and borderless. But so are we. Namibia's financial sector is resilient, agile, and anchored by strong partnerships. Together, we can ensure that the digital economy grows safely and that the integrity of our financial system remains uncompromised. Let us use today to learn, to collaborate, and to reaffirm our shared commitment to building a secure, trusted, and resilient financial ecosystem for all Namibians. I thank you, and I wish us a productive, insightful, and solution-oriented engagement.
Speaking also at the event is the Deputy Governor of the Bank of Namibia, Leonie Dani. Now, as criminals become more innovative and organized, banks and regulators must remain proactive, united, and adaptable in their approach. So let's take a listen to the Deputy Governor of the Central Bank of Namibia.
This year's themes are strengthening trust and resilience in Namibia's financial system. Could not be more timely or relevant. It speaks to the heart of what sustains any financial system, and that is trust. Trust is emphasized, it's an emphasized principle. So trust speaks to the heart of what sustains any financial system. Trust is the emphasized principle that lies at the heart of any successful financial system. Indeed, trust is any financial system most fundamental building block, and it lies at the heart and foundation of our economic system. Today, as we face new uncertainties, this trust remains essential. It is the bedrock upon which economic and financial stability is developed. Trust cannot stop at monetary and financial stability policy making. Nor can it stop at the door of the central bank as the regulator of stability within our financial system. It must extend to every aspect of public and private policy and business principles. People must trust that policymakers and elected officials will act to advance legitimate objectives in the interests of the Namibian society, and that they will do so effectively. They must trust that the foundations of our economic and financial systems are sound, are safe, are reliable, and can be trusted. And they must trust that the innovation that we all work on every day will be used to their benefit, not our own, and that we are focused on not merely disrupting the modules we have, but that we are building financial system modules that will add value to their life and make their lives better. When you deposit money into a bank, you are placing your trust in that institution to safeguard your funds. When a person takes a loan, they trust that the terms are fair, and in return, that the bank trusts that the borrower will honor his or her commitment in repaying their debt. If trust erodes on either side, the entire system of financial intermediation begins to falter. For a first-time user entering the financial system, experiencing fraud can be devastating. It can lead to a loss of confidence, not only in the institution, but in the entire system. Once confidence is lost, and that loss is due to fraud, many retreat to the informal channels, unsafe and unregulated spaces where there is little protection or recourse. In such cases, financial inclusion becomes a trap rather than a tool for empowerment and upliftment. Ladies and gentlemen, trust is the currency that gives credibility to banking institutions, to payment system providers, and confidence to consumers. Without it, even the most advanced financial system fails. We must also safeguard the integrity and safety of the very platforms that enable the digital ecosystem within which we operate today. If the system is not secure, the promise of innovation becomes hollow and trust becomes nothing but a passing word. If we reflect on rising threats and exposure, the rise of mobile technology has brought immense convenience to consumers, but it has also introduced new vulnerabilities. According to the 2024 CRAN Annual Report, 4G coverage in Namibia rose to 88.4%, the highest mobile phone penetration on the African continent. And by the end of quarter four, a commendable step towards digital and financial inclusion has unfolded, especially for a dispersed nation like ours. However, this growing connectivity also means that financial risk has moved from traditional banking halls to the palm of our hands, onto mobile screens where fraudsters are increasingly active. They impersonate financial service providers very, very well. Digital fraud, indeed, is on a steep upward trajectory in Namibia. The numbers are quite scary. In the banking sector alone, and we strip from here the payment system providers, fraud losses have increased sharply since 2020, rising from approximately 8.7 million to over 54 million in 2024. Between January and October 2025, these losses exceeded the 65 million mark. What is of further concern is that alongside existing fraud tactics, such as fake EFTs, point-of-sale skimming, and card-not-present transactions, new methods like social engineering have become a significant and persistent threat, often serving as the entry point that enables these attacks to succeed. Informal sector participants, including small traders and gig workers who increasingly depend on digital tools, remain particularly exposed to these evolving risks. It is therefore incumbent upon us as an industry to ensure that the digital growth does not leave consumers of financial services vulnerable or unprotected. Ladies and gentlemen, those are the numbers that gave me a real scare and a real run for our money. Because if you compare January to October 2025 versus 2024 and all earlier years, the picture in 2025 is telling us it's rapidly increasing. It's increasing at a pace where our preventative measures are failing us. And we as a collective are now failing the nation. Not a nice place to be in. But we can do something about it. So despite all these threats, the banking sector has made great strides in addressing fraud and cyber risk in recent years. Banking institutions have begun implementing fraud detection systems, strengthening information security policies, and conducting awareness campaigns for the clients. But their work is still far from being completed. Cybersecurity audits, red teaming exercises, and collaboration through industry forums have all contributed to strengthening our collective cyber posture. Even so, our collective journey is far from complete. We are only starting. As fraud tactics evolve, so too must our approach to risk management. Cybersecurity and fraud resilience must be elevated to board-level priorities, with compliance, IT operations, and customer services working in close coordination to ensure timely system-wide responses. Above all, consumer education must transition from reactive efforts to continuous engagement. Only then can we strengthen safer banking behaviors and reduce fraud at its source. Denver, thank you so very much for your example. Translate what does this mean to the person next to you. We are all financial services experts, and we could not even translate it to each other. So what for the ordinary citizen sitting in a remote small village where the total populace is not even 500 people? How must they understand this if we cannot even explain it to each other? Despite our collective effort to raise awareness at every possible platform, on media, on radio, on the television, not to give away one-time passwords, not to give away banking account details, not to give away identification numbers, our citizens do it every day. So where are we failing? Why is this message not landing? And why are they not protecting themselves? So who's the weakest link in this conversation? There's no winner, there's no loser. It's us all losing as a collective. So reflecting on what we have done thus far to ensure the banking, in particular, the banking sector's readiness to deal with financial fraud. I always tell the CEOs and the MDs of the banking institution when I meet with them, we will only win if you have the digital capability to match Leonie's known income with her known expenditure behavior. And if you can match my transactional behavior real time with everything I do as your customer. If you cannot match my known income and my known transactional behavior instantaneously and flag that which is unknown and strange in the behavior, you're not going to win. So the call on the banking industry has been a big stretch goal. Develop your capability that my known income and my known transactional behavior matches all the time. If there is a deviation, pause the transaction, flag it, and allow further questions to be asked. This cannot be done by human beings. It must be done by technology. And technology must filter the question to the human so that the human can reach the client and say, is this what I'm seeing and a transaction that you have enabled? That will truly prevent an 82-year-old pensioner from losing around 24 million in a single transaction, about to lose 50 million in another transaction. This is not an example plucked from air. This is a real Namibian case that happened in this year. If we can't work towards that, we are missing the point. So whilst advanced work has been undertaken by the Bank of Namibia since 2018 in its pursuit to strengthen the banking and payment system sector's cyber resilience, both in terms of enhancing our legislative framework around cyber, as well as undertaking cyber risk assessments on our regulated populace to ensure immediate identification, isolation, and response capability in the event of cyber incidents, our work lies ahead. In this regard, the bank introduced the Determination on Information Security, BIT 30. The banking industry will know this one very well, which establish a principle-based framework to guide the industry's approach to managing cyber risk and cyber fraud in particular. More recently, we also issued the payments determination on operational and cyber security standards for the national payment system, PSD 12. Our payment system providers and operators will know this very well. And that was to bolster across payment infrastructure and networks, our digital cyber capabilities. The bank was also the first African central bank that conducted cyber risk assessments on our banking industry to understand their cyber posture of, and work with the industry to ensure localized cyber capability is developed and strengthened to ensure immediate effective response capability in the event of a cyber incident. It's not been done anywhere else on the African continent. And within the industry, we are now busy developing implementation plans that really can help them to respond effectively, immediately, isolate, and make sure there's no system contagion risk.
And with that, let's pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. But remember, we're still speaking about fraud, cybersecurity crimes. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipuranenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Konongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okupitira oipindi konu kwa ndado ili nawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Okone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Speaking of also at the event is Linda Ipinge, who is the acting executive director in the Ministry of ICT. Now, before we get to her conversation, let's just get into a little bit of what actually cybersecurity in Namibia is looking like. Now, as Namibia continues its rapid shift toward digital banking, online shopping, mobile wallets, and electronic services, technology has made life more convenient, of course. However, it has also opened new doors for criminals. Fraud and cybersecurity threats are no longer problems of the future. They are dangers of the present. affecting individuals, businesses, and even government institutions. Now, fraud is any intentional deception used to gain unlawful advantage, usually financial. In Namibia, some of the most common forms of fraud include payment card fraud, identity theft, SIM swap scams, fake investment schemes, tender scams, and impersonation through social media or email. Now, the schemes are often well-organized, convincing, and emotionally manipulative, making it easier for people to fall victim. Cybersecurity, on the other hand, refers to the protection of systems, networks, and data from digital attacks. Cybercriminals target weaknesses in computers and in smartphones, ATMs, bank systems, databases, and even internet-connected appliances. Their goal can be to steal information, demand ransoms, shut down systems, or spy on sensitive data. Now, some of the most dangerous cyber threats today include phishing, which is fake emails or messages designed to trick you into giving out passwords, PINs, or banking details. Malware and ransomware, which are harmful softwares that locks or destroy your data until payment is made. SIM swap fraud, when criminals transfer your phone number to a new SIM card to access your bank accounts. Online impersonation, which is fraudsters pretending to be banks, government officials, or loved ones just to get to your money. Account takeovers, which are when hackers gain access to your email or banking account and change your security details. Now, what makes cybercrime especially dangerous is that it is often invisible. Victims may only realize weeks or months later that their identity or money has been stolen. Cybersecurity is not only the responsibility of banks or IT experts. Every individual is a frontline defender. Awareness is the first line of protection. Now, here are some essential safety steps every Namibian can take. But I think before we get to the safety essential tips, let's take a listen to Linda Aipinge Nakale, who is the acting executive director in the Ministry of Information, ICT, let's just say Information and Communication Technology.
Allow me to start by thanking the Bank of Namibia and Bankers Association of Namibia for inviting the government, represented by the Ministry of Information and Communication Technology, to deliver the remarks at the Fraud and Cybersecurity Risk Awareness Summit held under the theme Strengthening Trust and Resilience in Namibia's Financial System. The theme we can't translate in our own mother tongue. I tried, I couldn't. Ladies and gentlemen, every generation is presented with opportunities disguised as challenges, moments that test not only our resilience, but also unlock our potential. For Namibia, the rise in cybercrime and digital fraud is one such test. As we embrace digital transformation, broadening access, boosting innovation, and fueling economic progress, we must also rise to protect what we are building. Cyber threats are real, but so is our resolve. Today's summit is just not a response to emerging risks. It's a bold affirmation Namibia is working to shape a secure digital environment, safeguarding every citizen, empowering every user, and strengthening trust in the systems that connect us all. Cybercrime is no longer a distant phenomenon. It's here at our doorsteps, affecting families, businesses, and institutions. We have seen an increase in scams, phishing attempts, fake investment schemes, and unauthorized banking transactions. What is more concerning, ladies and gentlemen, is who the criminals are targeting. Our elderly citizens, we read in the papers that they are targeted. They usually trust these messages or the calls that appear to be official. Our young people that are desperate for various opportunities, they are enticed by these fraudulent online opportunities. Our small businesses, whose limited cybersecurity makes them easy victims. and our public and private institutions whose data is a higher value target. While these groups are among the most targeted, let us remember that everyone is potentially at risk, and we should all remain vigilant. Namibia is not an exception from global cyber threats. In recent years, we have observed more complex attacks, from often originating from diverse international networks. What was once local is now global. What was once delayed is now immediate. Threats emerging elsewhere can affect Namibia instantly. I see Cornelia from the Namibia Cybersecurity Incident Response Team, and they release reports on a quarterly basis. When you look at the figures in terms of the threats and vulnerabilities, it's quite scary. It is very scary. The Bank of Namibia, the World Bank Digital Development Overview of 2023, for example, indicated that the low and middle income countries are particularly vulnerable to cyber threats because they rapidly adopt digital infrastructure without robust cybersecurity framework and digital literacy initiatives. Namibia's digital growth must therefore be matched by equally deliberate investment in awareness, regulation, and resilience. Ladies and gentlemen, a secure digital nation does not happen by accident. It's built through deliberate and sustained action. Building such a nation requires resilient digital infrastructure, strong and modern legal frameworks, and a well-informed public. As a ministry responsible for ICT, we remain committed to strengthening the foundations and guiding Namibia's digital transformation with intention and accountability. In this digital age, security is a collective effort. Our cyber readiness must grow at the same pace as our digital adoption. Faster networks, expanded network coverage, and improved connectivity create new opportunities, but also new vulnerabilities, such as online fraud, phishing attacks, data breaches, and exploitation of weak access control. As Namibia's digital footprints expand, so must the systems that defend it. The stronger our digital connectivity, the firmer our protective shield must be. That is why the instruments such as Namibia Cybersecurity Strategy Awareness Raising Plan 2022 or 2027, together with the anticipated cybercrime legislation, are often essential. These frameworks provide both the guardrails and enforcement mechanisms needed to secure our digital and protect our people. They form a protective shield around financial systems, ensuring that citizens can transact with confidence, that businesses can innovate with cyber risks effectively managed, and that Namibia's financial infrastructure remains secure and resilient in the face of evolving global cyber threats. As we work to implement our national public key infrastructure for our electronic signature, cybersecurity will be essential to securing electronic signatures, e-government platforms, and our future smart economy. The government has established what we call the Namibia Cybersecurity Incident Response Team. I've mentioned that earlier, which resorts under the Communications Regulatory Authority of Namibia, and it plays an important role in safeguarding Namibia's critical infrastructure, coordinating national incident responses, and ensuring the country is prepared to detect, respond to, and recover from cybersecurity incidents effectively. NamCert is our digital first responder, a firewall with a national mandate that we all should support. The mandatory registration of SIM cards as per the provisions of the Communications Act, together with the forthcoming cybercrime legislation, are important tools to combat digital financial fraud and other digital crimes. These measures enhance accountability, reduce anonymity for perpetrators, and strengthen the nation's ability to protect the citizens and businesses alike. Ladies and gentlemen, I must indicate that even the strongest laws and systems cannot fully protect us if our people are not aware of the threats around them. Awareness is the first line of defense against fraud and cyber attacks. And like any shield, it must be forged in knowledge and reinforced through vigilance. To strengthen this national shield, the Ministry of ICT, in collaboration with South Essential IT and Lifeline Chadler Namibia, provides free physical and virtual cybersecurity awareness sessions to the public and various institutions. These sessions equip citizens with knowledge on how to identify scams, protect personal information, recognize phishing attempts, and secure their devices. This is just not an outreach. It is empowerment, because when people know better, they defend better. We do not only need cybersecurity professionals, we need cybersecurity citizens. I strongly encourage all citizens to take advantage of these opportunities and make cybersecurity awareness an integral part of our national defense. You're welcome to invite the Ministry of ICT and its partners to deliver these free cybersecurity awareness sessions at your convenience. Cybersecurity is not only an ICT matter, but it also equally impacts the financial system, with growing connectivity and reliance on ICT to deliver effective digital financial services. In 2022, and I'm happy to really report and commend the Bank of Namibia for establishing the Financial Industry Cybersecurity Council to strengthen cooperation across banks, payment institutions, telecoms, regulators, and cybersecurity experts.
Now, here are some essential safety steps every Namibian can take. One is that never share your banking details, that is your PINs or your OTP codes, with anyone, not even someone claiming to be from your bank. One thing that bank officials always say is that the bank will never call you to ask you for your PIN. And also always verify suspicious phone calls, emails or messages before responding. Don't be in a rush, but rather take your time and verify. Use strong, unique passwords for your accounts and change them regularly. Keep your phone and your computer software updated for security protection. Avoid clicking on unknown links or downloading attachments from unfamiliar sources. Immediately report suspicious activity to your bank or network provider. Educate your family members, especially elderly, relatives and young people on common scams. Also educate those elderly that just recently perhaps got their pensions, and you wouldn't want to read about them having lost their money. Educate them on the basics of how to keep themselves and their finances safe. Now, businesses and institutions also play an important role. They must invest in strong cybersecurity systems, staff training, regular risk assessments, and quick response plans. A single breach can cost millions and destroy public trust. Now, the message is clear. As our financial systems become more digital, our awareness must become more powerful. Trust in the banking and financial systems depend on vigilance, education and cooperation, because fraud and cybercrime are everyone's problem and everyone must be part of the solution. I also cut out a small extract of the conversation that I did have with Theo Hidulika, client support specialist at the FNB Namibia, on Saturday on Life Lessons. Let's take a listen to that short clip. I find it quite still informative for those of you who didn't listen to it. It could be of help. Let's take a listen. What exactly are we talking about when we talk about scams, fraud, cybersecurity, you know? I don't know. I know a lot of people know this, but then I know there are still those people who want the terminology of it in layman terms.
All right. So a scam is basically any trickery to get information from you, either via manipulation, dishonesty, and under false pretenses. Yes. So basically, a scam can happen in any form, in any way.
Yeah.
It's just that most of the time, it happens, the guys have an angle. It's either to get your personal information. It's either to get your personal information to use it to sell it on the black market.
Yeah.
Or to get your credentials in either your Gmail to, you know, to extort you for money, or they're going to share information, or on your banking to be able to use your funds. So scam comes in different forms, but in Namibia, mostly what we are seeing is bank fraud or bank scams.
Yeah.
Yes. So these scams can come from the card or card generated, meaning that you have compromised your card information, be that it was via a link, be that it was in via the phone, you entered somewhere. It can be impersonation, whereby you are called by somebody pretending to be calling from a legitimate organization with a story to make you fall for the trap of providing them with the information. It can be investment scams, whereby AI is now being used.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they are using our public figures. There was a video released the other time, mimicking our president, Honorable Menatumbo, and, you know.
In another time, mimicking the governor of the Bank of Namibia.
Exactly. As well as, my friend from NBC, the presenter. So with AI coming up, they can use this. So for example, let me say I get into your Gmail, right? And I find some very personal information. I can create videos with AI with your face, and I can use it to, you know, to blackmail you. If you don't do this, I will put this out, you know. So it's a dangerous world we live in, and your digital footprint on social media, guys, be careful. I, for myself, I had to deactivate almost all my accounts, because throughout the year, especially on Facebook, I saw my pictures being used. No, you can invest. No, I'm looking for love. A, B, C, D. And remember, it's your face that's being used. So it's dangerous for you as well. You can be like, I wasn't involved.
Yes.
But if an individual comes and say, no, this man on this face is the one that robbed me, the police have the right to investigate, and it can, you know.
Implicate you.
So yes, yo, scams are a lot, eh?
Especially AI, guys.
Yeah, scams are a lot. And there's this ones where, you know, we can do
Bitcoin.
Yeah, Bitcoin, cryptocurrency trading for you. Colleagues, if it's too good to be true, it's not. For example, if individual is saying, no, if you give me 5,000, I'll be able to give you 25,000. Let's say within a month. That is 300% profit. That's not possible in 30 days. You cannot give 5,000 to get 25,000, meaning that your profit is 20,000, which is almost three times more than what you invested. No, guys. So also one thing, and one sensitive thing that I've learned over the past, the forces play on one of our most not really, I would say, side that we like to show, but they play on our greed side. Because if it's something that will benefit me, I'm more likely to fall for it. Yes. So, yeah. But so we need to be very careful.
Yeah.
And it's, and the thing with these scams, especially in our country, they are easy to detect and avoid. They are not complex. It's just that, like I said, they work on your greed side. And if you fell or you fall victim to this, it's going to be a problem. So today we will speak more of that.
Okay, and there you had it from Theo Hidulika. He is the client support specialist at FNB Namibia. Now, with that, also on Saturday in Life Lessons, we hosted the show on the topic on fraud, scams, and cyber security or cyber crime. So, should you be interested in a thorough conversation on that on a more, I think, relaxed manner, please do head over to our podcast session. All you have to do is download the Eagle FM app. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. As for now, you are tuned into On the Radar News Analysis.
Lipura nengeno wapubwa Eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshuwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Igal FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Igal FM. Onmara etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kongerewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu matatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. And now it is at this point that we tell you about trading economics before getting to that economic indicators. Now, when US dollar today will get you 17 Namibian dollars and 37 cents. Is it just me? Or is the dollar just a little bit fluctuating suddenly? Also, 1 euro is equals to 20 Namibian dollars. 1 pound sterling is equals to 22 Namibian dollars and 75 cents. 1 Swiss franc is equals to 21 Namibian dollars and 54 cents. 1 United Arab Emirates dirham is equals to 4 Namibian dollars and 73 cents. 1 Chinese yuan is equals to 2 Namibian dollars and 47 cents. 1 Botswana pula is equals to 1 Namibian dollar and 29 cents. Now heading over to trading economics. UK natural gas futures fell to about 76.5 pence per therm, the lowest since July 2024. That is following a drop in European prices and improved sentiment around potential peace talks in the Russia-Ukraine war. Now, US-Ukraine discussions in Geneva signaled progress and a deal could shift global energy flows. Europe still competes for fuel as it phases out Russian gas, now just 10% of EU imports. Prices also fell on expectations of warmer than normal early December weather. Mid conditions, high wind output and increased LNG and the Norwegian pipeline deliveries have cut domestic demand. So with limited storage, the UK has been exporting surplus gas to Europe, and flows to Belgium recently hit a 1 year high. Producer prices in Latvia increased by 1.7% year on year in October 2025, accelerating from a 1.4% rise in the previous month. Now, this marked the highest rate since February, largely contributed to the higher costs in mining and quarrying at 17.9% versus 13.9% in September, and a rebound in electricity, gas, steam and air conditioning supply at 0.7% versus -3.6%. Now, in contrast, price growth eased in manufacturing and in water supply, sewage, waste management, and remediation activities. Now, on a monthly basis, producer prices increased by 0.8% in October, following a 0.1% rise in September. that we had for you today in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. We pause here now, take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back with news beyond the borders. Now, should have been interested in the news bulletin. OPEX expanding on it, asking questions, contributions, or opinions. Our study line is open. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. I'll see you after the commercial break.
Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka. Okupitira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijemo ili nawa. Ninge kwata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kongerewa, mra hetatu natu, bali o hetatu matatu, o mafelane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually to put my dream in economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back for News Beyond the Borders. We're starting off in South Africa on KwaZulu-Natal's floods, where emergency services recover a body of one of the three people missing. Let's take a listen.
To one of our headline stories this Monday morning, three people are believed to be missing and several others left destitute in areas in the Umshwati municipality that's near Pietermaritzburg in KwaZulu-Natal. This is all after heavy rains flooded their homes. The severe weather conditions follow a warning from the South African Weather Service. The KwaZulu-Natal Human Settlements Department says it will visit the affected communities today. Let's bring in the spokesperson, Senzele Mzilwa, who joins us now via our video link. Senzele, thanks very much indeed for making time to speak to us. I understand you've just arrived at the scene of one of the more affected areas. Are you able to confirm the reports we're seeing at the moment that at least one body has now been found?
Yes, good morning to you and good morning to the viewers at home. Yes, tragically, the incident occurred last night where there was flooding right here in New Hanover. We can confirm that our teams are on the ground right now. As soon as the MEC was alerted to this, MEC for Kokta, Reverend Tlasi Buthelezi, deployed his team to this area. As we speak right now, search and rescue teams are recovering one body. There are two more that are still missing. The MEC has deployed a full complement of disaster management teams to the scene, and they are working right throughout.
Are you able to help us get a better understanding, Senzele, of the circumstances that led to these three people going missing? In many instances, we've heard in the past, for example, that, people may have been in their homes fast asleep when these floods started gaining momentum.
Yes, well, flooding occurred yesterday due to heavy rains. We did receive a level 5 weather warning from the Weather Service, which indicated that heavy rains can be expected, specifically within this area of Mkungundlovu district, particularly in Umshwati and other areas. We did activate our teams who were on the ground and who were monitoring a number of areas, and we did alert our communities. We are saddened by the tragic incident that has occurred here. We have also our teams who have been alerted to a number of incidents that have occurred across the province, and we are currently consolidating that information from all of those teams.
Yeah. What do we know about three people, Senzele? Their ages, are they related by any chance?
Well, from the information that we are receiving at this moment in time, we do know that one female is being recovered right now, middle-aged, and then the two that are missing, it's believed to be two males. But our teams are working closely with the community and relevant structures to ensure that we provide all the necessary support. We are also expecting more heavy rains across the week, and our teams are working closely to ensure that across the province the situation is closely monitored.
Yeah, it's an all too familiar sight, isn't it? Unfortunately, we've been here before in different parts of KwaZulu-Natal. What's your sense as the government of the province about how responsive communities are being now to these warnings from the South African Weather Service and certainly from the provincial government itself?
Well, the Weather Service has been on point, and they have been giving us timely information, which we have reacted to. We are also seeing greater collaboration with communities. Also, the reality, of course, is that climate change is here, and we are seeing that a number of areas that are prone to flooding, these areas are getting more and more flooded. We are also working closely as a province with a number of NGOs with a specific aim. As we speak right now, the very same NGOs are here with us on the ground. They are assisting us with the search and rescue. They are assisting us to assist those that have been affected, as there's been a number of houses that have been completely damaged and destroyed when this flooding occurred yesterday. So there is greater collaboration across the province of KZN.
All right. That's good to hear. Are you able to tell us at this stage what the major needs are? Of course, in these communities, there are school-going children. I imagine food is top of mind. Shelter is a big concern. What are your areas of, what are you prioritizing, perhaps I should ask?
Well, at this moment in time, our teams are on the ground. We've got our community development workers. We're working also together with line function departments to ensure that we get a full assessment of the full extent of the damage that has occurred right now. We also have a number of roads that have been flooded, a number of bridges that have been completely destroyed, a number of houses as well that have been damaged. But at this moment in time, we're doing assessments. We do also see our social partners. Some of them have set up soup kitchens as well. We are coordinating this as KZN COCTA through the Provincial Disaster Management Center, and we are ensuring that these communities in their most time of need, we're able to be there as a government. And also, we're working right throughout the clock to ensure that those that are missing right now, that the bodies are recovered, and we will not rest up until these bodies are recovered.
Yeah. So far, that means one person has sadly passed on, two others are still missing. Have you received any updates about those numbers, Senzele? Is that still the information that is also at your disposal?
Yes, that's the information that we have. On the ground right now, our search and rescue teams are recovering one body right now, a family-aged female. And also, we do have two more people that are still missing. Our teams are working around the clock. We've got a number of partners that we're working with to ensure that we do our best to ensure that we recover those that are still missing. A number of houses have been damaged as well, as this incident occurred in an area where there were houses that were built along what looks like it was a river many, many, many years ago. So we are going to be working closely with the community and local leadership to ensure that we prevent such things from ever happening.
All right, Senzele Mzila, thanks very much indeed for speaking to us. Senzele is the spokesperson of the KZN Corporate Governance Department, live to us from the scene, actually, of one of the hardest hit areas in the Umshwati local municipality near Pietermaritzburg in KwaZulu-Natal.
The South African Depression and Anxiety Group, also known as SADAG, has launched a new online mental health support.
The South African Depression and Anxiety Group, SADAG, has launched a new free online mental health support group for people serving communities. Now, the support group will offer a safe, confidential space for people who serve the community to connect with others who understand and receive support. So to talk to us more about this initiative, we're joined now by Crystal Kemp, who's project manager at SADAG. Crystal, thanks so much for your time. Welcome to Morning Live.
Thank you so much for having me.
So this new free online mental health support group, exactly what is its aim and how will it work?
So SADAG has over 180 free support groups around the country. But Leah's group, which has just recently launched, is specifically aimed at caregivers within communities, those who are trying to do the work to support communities. We know we don't have enough resources. They're facing very challenging situations. And to make sure that we're prioritizing the health care of the caregiver, this group is a phenomenal place for anyone working in communities that feels like it's taking its toll.
So just in terms of what you've been able to glean so far, Crystal, what are some of the challenges and the pressures that people serving communities have to contend with?
So hearing a lot of accounts of trauma, not enough resources, seeing people who may be hungry, people who not be maybe facing unemployment. You know, there are so many challenges within our communities that affect mental health. But obviously as a caregiver, someone who's giving and reaching out and trying to support, it can be very, very challenging to kind of bear that on one's shoulders. And so this group is for a space where other members of, where other community leaders can say, okay, this is what we're facing. This is what we're struggling. It's very real and it's normal that it's also affecting us.
So just in terms of that support, is there, you know, a set number of people who would make up any particular support group, or how will it work?
With court backlog.
So support groups typically have between 8 to 12 members, and they typically run for about an hour and a half. So as soon as we go over that, not everyone has an equal opportunity to talk, in which case we would typically split the support group to create more resources. We know a lot of people sign up and then life happens. They're not able to necessarily attend. And so we'll often have groups that have 50 members in it, but those groups aren't, those members aren't necessarily coming to every single meeting, but they can join, stay and leave as they feel necessary.
And, you know, in the introduction, I was saying, Crystal, that sometimes these people who work in community see the most gruesome things, and that may be hard to contend with, you know, from burned bodies to, as you mentioned, perhaps children or elderly people who are malnourished, not taken care of. And in terms of their mental health, how does all of this impact on them? And how does it impact their ability to perform their duties properly?
So I think it's key to prioritize the mental health of caregivers. So SADAG doesn't only offer support groups. We also have over 30 toll-free helplines, including the country's only suicide crisis helpline. So any community leader feeling exhausted, feeling as though their mental health has taken a knock, we really encourage them to phone SADAG. We're open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's totally toll-free, so that a counselor can assist them. We need to prioritize everyone's healthcare because we know we can't pour from empty cups. And so especially in the case of community leaders and stakeholders, we need to ensure that they also know where they can turn to support and make sure that they're also getting the help that they need.
And in this group, Crystal, would police officers, for example, is this something that they can join?
Absolutely. Any community stakeholders, police, religious leaders, social workers, doctors, really anyone who's actively trying to make a difference in communities is absolutely welcome to join.
And from across the country, so it doesn't matter where you are, you will be paired with like people.
Yes, absolutely. So SADAG groups, some of them are online, some of them are face-to-face. This group in particular, run by Leah, is online. And so anyone from anywhere in the country is welcome to join and connect with others who really have a first-hand understanding of some of the challenges they're facing.
And for those watching right now, Crystal, how exactly do they get in touch, you know, in order to join one of these groups?
So you can definitely reach out to our SADAG website, www.sadag.org. It is an incredible resource of materials, webinars. You can see all of our 180 support groups for a variety of different topics. There's basically a group for everyone. Or you can phone us on 0800 456 789.
And just before I let you go, with the scourge of drugs in our communities, I mean, here as well, that there's so much that community workers need to contend with and what they face, whether it is from the actual drug addict or family members who may be victims or members of the community. Are those some of the things that the group will also look into?
So we have dedicated groups for those using substances or those facing addiction, as well as caregivers, family members, and loved ones of those who have substance use problems. And so absolutely, there's so many different groups that really there's something for everyone. We know substance use is a major issue. And we also even have a dedicated substance use helpline with the Department of Social Development.
So there you have it. And Crystal, thank you so much for speaking to us. Crystal Kemp, Project Manager at SADC, and talking to us there about this new online support group for people that serve our communities. And if you're one of those people, one of those caregivers or any of the other stakeholders working in any of our South African communities, we know that sometimes you are faced with very tough situations, things that may affect you mentally or may be hard to get over. So SADC has established this group, and feel free to contact them so that you can become part of a group that would help you debrief and deal with the mental health aspects of this. All right.
Meanwhile, in Zambia, the House of Chiefs backs constitution amendment process.
The House of Chiefs, religious leaders, and civil society organizations have expressed their support of the ongoing constitution amendment process. House of Chiefs Chairperson Chief Chongo says the traditional leadership fully backs the constitution amendment process because of progressive clauses like delimitation.
So the best is to engage in dialogue. Sometimes it's out of ignorance. Some people do not understand really what changes are supposed to be made. That's why there is a process. People have to be sensitized. Government has to spend the resources and the time to make sure that people understand. Because it's a constitution for the people. It's not for government. It is for the people.
Meanwhile, founder of Battle Cry for Zambia, Apostle Dr. Brian Mayumbu, has appealed to all stakeholders to work together and maintain open communication with government throughout the consultations.
To every stakeholder at Battle Cry for Zambia, we want to urge the civil society, opposition, political parties, and also other sectors, that in this constitutional amendment process, there is need for them to dialogue with the government. We believe that together we can be able to achieve what needs to be achieved.
Action Institute for Policy Analysis Center Executive Director Solomon Ngoma says constitutional reform is vital for maintaining a governance framework that protects citizens' rights and supports national development.
The constitutional amendment process is important because it allows the nation to refine and strengthen its supreme law in response to changing social and political and economic realities. It ensures that the constitution remains relevant, protects citizens' rights, and provides a framework that supports good governance and national development.
And Archbishop Elias Changa of the Missionary Alliance for Global Evangelism says the process will help the country address the gaps in the existing constitution.
The constitution amendment process is important because it allows a country to adapt changing circumstances, address gaps in the existing constitution, and ensure that the supreme law of the land remains relevant and effective in promoting the welfare of its citizens.
We urge the nation to remain calm and prioritize dialogue over confrontation as discussions continue regarding the constitution amendment process. We acknowledge and commend the president's humility and responsiveness in the deferring of Bill 7 over concerns which were raised by various stakeholders, a clear demonstration of leadership that listens and respects public input and values dialogue.
And Bishop Abraham Mwamba of World Touch Ministries also called for dialogue regarding disagreement around the constitution amendment process.
We think that demonstration will drown the voice of reason and achieve nothing. But dialogue will produce understanding and common good. Hence, we appeal to all the good people of our country to ignore leaders that think that ignition is a way to solve national problems and disagreement.
With support from leaders, the call remains for Zambians to participate meaningfully, ensuring the amendment process results in a constitution that serves the nation's present and future needs. Mwamba Makonde, ZNBC News, Lusaka.
Zambia credit rating has been upgraded.
Zambia's credit rating has been upgraded to CCC+/C from standard default, signaling renewed confidence in the government's debt management strategy and a shift away from a history of unsustainable borrowing. According to S&P Global Ratings, the improved rating reflects Zambia's strengthening fiscal position and its progress towards restoring financial stability, reducing refinancing risks, and improving its standing in international markets. And commenting on this, Finance Minister Dr. Stumbeko Musokotwane says the latest S&P upgrade of Zambia's credit rating signifies that the country is no longer considered a debt defaulter.
We have to ask the question, with this change in the credit rating, what does it mean for Zambia? The first answer is straightforward. As I said earlier on, this is a recognition of the fact that we are making progress on the problem of solving unsustainable debt.
Speaking during a press briefing in Lusaka, Dr. Musokotwane expressed confidence that the improved rating will help attract more foreign direct investment in the country.
Similarly, sectors such as public-private partnerships, those that want to invest money to do roads, to do power generations and so forth, they too had a problem. The decision that has been made to lift Zambia's status away from default, this is something that is going to help us.
And PricewaterhouseCoopers PwC country senior partner Andrew Chibuye says the development will reduce the cost of servicing Eurobonds.
It basically means Zambia is perceived more favorably. It means Zambia's credit rating is seen as more favorable, as a place where you can do business with a lower risk that you encounter challenges from a credit perspective.
Meanwhile, the Economics Association of Zambia, EAZ, says the improved credit rating will provide fiscal space for the government to finance key infrastructure projects. EAZ National Secretary Dr. Nicholas Mayinza told ZNBC News that the upgrade may also prompt commercial banks to lower lending rates, provided fiscal discipline is maintained.
And when you talk about this, what we'd want to see at the end of the day is that hopefully this can also lead to the banks, our commercial banks, lowering their lending rates, of course, subject to the fiscal discipline. And then number two, what this entails is that it creates some fiscal space for government to fund projects.
And Center for Trade Policy and Development, CTPD Executive Director Isaac Maipopo, said the rating upgrade will boost investor confidence in the country.
With this upgrade in terms of our rating, it goes a long way in terms of improving the confidence that prospective investors might have about Zambia.
Doreen Tembe, ZNBC News, Lusaka.
Small Government and UNDP launch Youth Jobs Initiative.
Is part of Somalia's broader shift toward locally driven development and private sector-led growth, with one of the youngest populations in the world, creating jobs and economic opportunities for youth remain essential for the country's long-term stability and recovery plans. The program seeks to expand youth employment, strengthen local businesses, and drive innovation in emerging green and digital sectors.
As you may are aware, Somalia, there was a problem when it came to technical skills. So there's a huge shortage of technical skills, and that's the reason we invested on the Tifad school. And now those who are training, especially on the shorter courses, over 60%, for example, they get employed as soon as they finish the course.
Fresh from university, Zahra Yusuf enrolled in this training center for a short course on innovation and leadership to better prepare herself for Somalia's increasingly competitive job market. She later secured an internship through the program, eventually leading to employment. Zahra, a business administration graduate, is one of the more than 5,000 students mentored by the center. She says career guidance and skills training are crucial for helping young graduates transition into the labor market.
After graduating with a business administration degree majoring in entrepreneurship, I was fortunate to join this center for training in innovation and leadership. I believe that when young people receive mentorship and skills building opportunities, they can create their own jobs instead of waiting for the government or anyone else.
Youth unemployment in Somalia stands at around 67%, while more than three-quarters of the population is under the age of 30, highlighting the urgent need for targeted skills development and improved access to finance. To address this challenge, the UNDP and the Somali government have partnered with local organizations, including the Hormuud Salaam Foundation. The initiative aims to equip young entrepreneurs with the skills, confidence, and investment needed to drive the next generation of Somali businesses.
The program is articulated around three objectives. One is to improve the business environment. One is to focus on youth employability. And the third one is on women-led entrepreneurship initiatives. So through the Hormuud Salaam Foundation, we're also reaching to Hormuud Telecom and Somali Salaam Bank in terms of facilitating access to finances and digital solutions that will be explored across the board.
The $1.2 million project aims to transform Somalia's green and blue economic potential into real economic opportunity, formalizing small businesses, creating jobs, and promoting sustainable development. However, the private sector says there's still a major shortage of technical skills, especially among the thousands of students who graduate from universities each year.
We have quite a large number of young people or youth who graduate from universities and who are also unemployed, which means that there is no match between some studies and the need in the market. So we need we are actually trying to keep to fill that gap.
While Somalia's private sector provides the majority of jobs, many businesses still struggle with informality and limited capital. Through these joint initiatives, both the private sector and thousands of job-seeking youth hope to bridge the country's employment gap. Hamid Lahiye, CGTN, Mogadishu, Somalia.
With court backlogs continuing to strain the pace of justice, Commercial Courts Justice Thomas Ochaya is calling on insurers to turn to alternative dispute resolution, a mechanism he says is faster, cheaper, and better suited for resolving industry disputes.
And he has emphasized that we must put our ego aside
we resolve what is this we are failing to agree. Because these two people, these two parties came together, started a business or whatever it was, this commercial transaction, it must also be concluded by the two people. So it is clear that we have been emphasizing that at the insurance company, at the insurance broker or any provider, you are in business of providing that service. Do not leave this person, leave your desk without agreeing. Don't give them an opportunity even to come to the regulator. Make sure that you do not let this person go out unsatisfied.
You give it to your lawyers. The lawyers will speak all the English they can. They'll present all the authorities they can. But at the end of the day, the decision is going to come down to who? One. And normally, there's a winner and there's a loser. But in ADR, it's a give and take. You can choose. But of course, not all disputes can be determined through ADR. There are some which can't. And we are alive to some of those things. So we also take, you know, we just look at it and say, this is a matter certainly we don't think should be sent to ADR. It's a legal point.
These remarks were made before the insurance industry leaders, where they gathered for the CEO's breakfast meeting, a high-level quarterly forum organized by the Insurance Regulatory Authority. Ron Habwe, NTV.
Uganda trains tour guards and taxi operators in order to boost a global image.
The National Airport has more than 300 taxi operators who will come and transport visiting guests to various destinations across the city and suburbs. This training has provided tour guides and hoteliers with essential public relations and security skills.
And one of the things we are putting in consideration is improving airport taxi pickup and drop access points and parking.
According to the Civil Aviation Authority and PASAID, this sector plays a crucial role as these operators have first contact with the tourists and other visitors. It is important for them to have knowledge of customer care, communication etiquette, tourism awareness, peace and political stability, as well as promotion of Uganda's products and destinations.
And with that, we have concluded that we've officially come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Reader News Analysis. To stay tuned for the Onkono Nadingi program with Lois Ashimi, and thereafter the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut, and the Business Economic segment with David Chambe. Goodbye.